Hey there, welcome everybody to Bill and Jerry's excellent podcast, aka Spilling the Career Tea. For those who might be joining us for the first time, this is a podcast about career readiness. I worked at Citi in HR. Jerry will introduce himself in a minute. We have a wonderful guest speaker here today, and it's all about helping students and early career professionals figure it out and manage their career. We're excited to be back into the podcast flow today. So I'm Bill, he's Jerry. Jerry, what's going on?
Hi, Bill, welcome back.
Thank you.
I'm really excited today because we're joined by a great friend of mine, Mike Summers. He's currently the Associate Vice President of the Gateway Center at Lafayette College.
That's correct.
Mike and I were introduced through colleagues. People said, hey, there's this guy, Mike, you have to meet. And someone said the same thing to you.
Yeah, Jerry, you have to meet.
We met and we've been friends ever since. So Mike, I really appreciate you joining us today. Mike is a Wake Forest graduate and he's worked in executive search and recruiting. He's been in the corporate world with GlaxoSmithKline and Bausch & Lomb. He's known at the Gateway Center for innovative programs that put career exploration at students' fingertips. And Mike is a triathlete.
Oh.
We call him the Iron Man. So that being said, take it away, Iron Man.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be here, and I sort of feel humbled by all those things that you said and also reminded me at the same time. I've been around a long time. I've done a lot of different things. So I think that also makes what I do in the space that I operate in, leading the team at the Gateway Career Center, a little bit unique in that I haven't spent my entire career in higher ed. So I bring a lot of different perspectives combined with the great work of the team there helping our students and our alumni is sort of the secret sauce, if you will. So I'm really excited to be here today, and thank you for having me as a guest.
You know, Mike, as we talked, even just before we started here, one of the things, or several things, stick out about your impressive career to date. But I think you used the term, careers are not linear. And I think you're an excellent example of that, obviously.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Oh, it's such a great question, Bill. So when I graduated from Wake Forest back in 1987, so those who are listening can do the math, it's been a while. I actually left there working for GlaxoSmithKline in consumer sales. I really enjoyed it, but what really made me want to pivot was I love sales, I love working with people, but I wanted to really do something where I could see the impact of my work. And I couldn't really see that in consumer. So I made the transition to Bausch & Lomb, all about the eyes, knowing that the products that we were selling to the doctors, the ophthalmologists, the optometrists, were actually having an impact, and you knew what that impact was on the patient. So that made me feel really passionate about that. I was with them for about 15 years. And then Bausch & Lomb, like many companies, went through a buyout, and they were acquired lock, stock, and barrel by a private equity firm. Mm. And so I made the transition out and went to a search firm to help me with my next career, and they were actually looking to build out a practice around life sciences and executive search. Mm-hmm. So I was in executive search for a number of years, but then what I realized is what I really love to do is help people and help young people, and I made that transition from executive search into higher education.
Yeah, and I, you know, that's the point that sticks out to me, and for students and early career professionals that are watching this podcast, I'll guess, you tell me,
yeah.
You didn't know that going in. What was the path? I mean, how did you get, what happens, and what advice actually would you have for students that are about to graduate, and they're not even sure that you, I'm sure you hear this
all the time. All the time. Especially today, students feel so much pressure to find the perfect job. Well, first of all, there is no perfect job, right? There's no perfect job, and the job you're going to get coming out of college is your first job. You're likely to have 12, 13, or 14 jobs. For me, it's been 3 or 4 different companies, but within those companies, probably a total of 18 or 20 different titles and did many different things within those companies. So I think the key thing is focus in an area that you find joy and a life that you can begin to lead with meaning and purpose as your first step. go get skills and experiences, and then you'll start to discover what are the things that really mean a lot to you and that resonate with you, because you can only have a limited amount of experience as a student in your studies and in your coursework, and just get out and get as much experience as you can, and then that will sort of evolve over time. There's no predetermined, in most careers, way you're going to go. It's just take that step, learn skills, network with people inside the organization, learn about what they do, and that can help inform something in another direction or path you might take within that organization. Yep.
So that being said, how can you stand out when you're trying to get your first job and you have no experience?
It's a really great question. And I think number one is you've got to network like crazy. You really do. And that's that word that many students kind of fear. It's very intimidating. What comes to mind is a really dark room, lots of name badges, everybody formally dressed, and those with social capital, and those who've come up with families that have told them or worked with them on what to do, excel in those environments. Everybody else sort of floats to the side and stands there. And I said, it's intimidating. But networking really is nothing more than connecting with people, telling them about your story, about who you are as a student, what you're studying, what you've done, what you're interested in. And when you start to have those conversations, those folks actually have a network of people they can tap you into to help you advance in that. So I think that's really, really important to a student to be thinking about those things early on. And I tell you, at the age of 60, which I just turned last week, it never stops, right? You're building your network all along each and every time. You referenced earlier our introduction. Right. That expanded our network plus one, right? So that's a little bit about what I would say regarding that.
Yeah. So in your role today at Lafayette, how often do you hear, but I'm very hesitant, it's awkward to me.
Yep.
I don't know how to do that. Meaning networking, right? So what do you say to them?
Yeah, I said, well, first of all, I would say networking is nothing more than really just having a conversation. So every student actually has a network already. They just don't call it that, right? Friends, relatives, parents. And when you need help with something, you go to those people and they provide that help to you, right? Because you've articulated what you need help with. Networking professionally is no different. It's exactly the same. What I would say is start out with low-hanging fruit. In college, your alumni network is those folks that are there. You have an affinity, a connection. So that's really where the least amount of pressure and expectation is going to have, because they want to help current students of the school they went to. So start off with people where you can start to get comfortable with your story, as I say. And then when there's the one person or two people you really want to connect with, you've built your confidence, then that's when you reach out to them and articulate your story. So start on the low end, work your way towards those that you're really interested in when you feel that confidence.
You have an engaging personality and you know how to network like crazy. You know more people than I can imagine. Were you always comfortable with networking?
No, I've told you my story before.
I forgot your story.
I got to a point where I had to hustle. I had to get clients. Right. Remember?
Yeah.
I had a child. So my whole perspective changed, and I learned to network quickly out of necessity. I wanted to feed that kid. I wanted to give them a great life. And I knew that I had to be the face of the business and go out there. But luckily, I was very genuine. I didn't try and be something I wasn't, and I just was able to connect with people and realized right away it was important, and I saw the fruits of my labor. It just worked out for me, but I rolled into it. I sort of lucked out, and I was doing something at the time that not a lot of people were doing, and that area of law made it so I could confidently go up to people and say, hey, I can do this. If you have any people that need that service, please refer them to me. And likewise, I'll refer you anybody that doesn't need that service.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And, you know, you remind me, Mike, I'll throw it back to you. Yeah. You know, as I think about my own career, I worked 40 years at one firm at Citi. Jerry and I are proud graduates of the University of Miami. But the point of that was, I'm thinking now, and I love your thoughts. Yeah. Did my career get, and maybe it's both end, influenced by my network? I can think early on, it clearly did. Mm. But I recall, because I didn't start out at Citi for 3 years in a leadership program, and I made, I guess, what was a positive enough impression on an HR head who made a switch to Citi and then said, I'll bring along four or five people I think might have a career or could be a good fit. So my question is, which one is the bigger influence?
Oh, gosh. I think it's not an or, it's an and. I think it really depends situationally on where you are, but I think sometimes you do have folks that will go to a different organization and pull strong people with them. I had that happen one time during my career. And the other was, you mentioned executive search. It was an executive search firm that brought me to Lafayette. So my good work at Wake Forest led me to a search firm that then pulled me along. And then here we go, right? We haven't talked about this yet, but I'm going to be making a transition to a new institution in July. And one of the firms that I recommended to my boss, she considered to do the search, is the firm that searched and found me because that person did a great job, is operating in the space, and so I recommend it. Now, ultimately, it'll be her choice as to who she goes with, but again, it speaks to those people that you had a positive experience with that you make recommendations on who to do further business with moving
forward. So can we break that story here on the Spilling the Career Tea podcast?
Sure. You know,
what are you going to do there?
I will first say that I've spent 8 years at Lafayette College. It's an absolute love of mine. I love Lafayette. I love my team there. My team knows how passionate I am about lowering barriers for all students. Talent's evenly distributed, opportunity is not, and it's sort of one of my core values to knock down those barriers to give people an equal chance and an opportunity. This challenge and that I'm going to move on to, it's at Davidson College in Davidson, North Carolina. I will be the chief career officer and executive director of the Matthews Center for Career Development, and that position will report directly to the president. So that my voice will be at the table with the cabinet to help advance career education, career development, and put an advising model in place that will further elevate that so that we knock down those barriers and give that democratization of opportunity to more and ultimately, hopefully, all students.
How did they find you?
Another search firm. A search firm came and found me. And so that's sort of how that all works. I also think, too, when you're doing really solid work and you build a solid network, things find you.
It all connects.
Yeah, I mean, it all connects. So
and that's amazing. So first of all, congratulations.
Yeah,
Davidson College is the number one regional liberal arts school in that area. Right. And to be the chief career executive reporting directly to the president is a major accomplishment. So I really am happy.
Thank you. I stand on the shoulders of others and I'm really excited about Davidson going in this direction and very fortunate that I'll be taking the lead of a great team down there.
And I'm sure you're going to bring a lot of innovation there.
Do my best.
So with that said, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up some of the issues that are affecting young people right now, today. Yeah. Not just younger students graduating and trying to get their first job, but younger early career professionals who may be going through layoffs or transitions. And it seems like the economy is growing. It seems like companies are reporting good earnings. It seems like there are a lot of jobs. We all look at LinkedIn. We see tons of listings. But we continuously hear that it's harder and harder for a young person to find a job.
Yeah.
So what do you think that is? Is it AI?
It's a great question. I think certainly AI is a part of it, right? I think the big impact of AI is yet to hit. The other thing I think, too, is with platforms that are out there, meaning applicant tracking systems to help college students that are doing its best to further the advancement of democratization of opportunity, it's created an application volume flow issue for employers. And so it really then, we started talking about this earlier, networking, it goes back to, I've got 5,000 applications for this one job. Mm. Our department's been cut in half. So I can't go through all these 5,000. So, Jerry, who do you know?
Right.
It goes back to that.
Right.
So it goes back to your network, and leaning into your alumni network is so pivotal in a world where technology is advancing, whether that's AI or whether that is, there's AI actually in those platforms as well. So it really goes back to it makes the network, even in my view, almost more important today of your institution to help leverage things for you.
You know, I think that's so well said, Mike. In my retirement now from Citi, I run a little part-time career coaching gig for students and early career professionals. And I can't tell you, you know, how often we talk about networking, just to get back to that for a minute. And I don't know the math, but I say to them, you send a random resume out, whatever the platform is, 10 to 15% maybe
Maybe.
You'll get a response,
maybe.
Right? You add any kind of networking connection. I like to categorize them in A-lister, B-lister, C-lister.
Yeah.
A really knows you, mm-hmm. and they're going to go out of their way, right?
Yep.
Whereas B in the middle, and C might be a well-intended alum, but you don't know them.
Right.
But they're an alum, and
Absolutely.
They'll reach out, right? But the incremental, as you just said, likelihood that you're going to get any kind of response when you use some kind of connection, right? And I assume that comes up often with your success stories with your students.
100%. 100%. The alumni network is an asset that you cannot overstate the importance of,
yeah.
especially today. And the thing is they really want to be tapped. They really want to help students.
Yeah, they do.
They really have a passion for helping
That's for
students.
Sure.
And they're in a position to do that. And students just need to work with their career centers to help leverage that alumni network because they know the what and the why. The challenge is the how. Gaining the confidence and the how to do that. And you mentioned the A, B, and C. Think
yeah.
about LinkedIn. There's
yeah.
first degree, second degree, and third degree
yeah,
connections.
Right.
That's essentially what you just described.
Yeah.
The last thing I would say relative to that is they've got to create a system, whether that's a spreadsheet, whether that
yes.
is some sort of tracking mechanism, that as you're doing your outreach, you're circling back and following up and exercising that polite persistence because professionals are really extremely busy. And so they don't mind polite persistence. And those who are politely persistent are likely those that will get the job and get the opportunity or at least get the interview.
Yeah.
Right.
So you know, we talked about this. I use the phrase respectfully annoying. You're being nicer and saying polite resistance.
No. But it's the same thing.
But you know what? It is a pain point for students these days. How often do I I didn't hear from Jerry.
Yeah.
Jerry's busy. But if you don't follow up with Jerry and it's not on your spreadsheet, you know, I wrote him on whatever, June 1st, I'm going to write him again on June 21st, whatever, right? Because sometimes it's that second or even third outreach, all right, now I can help, I can open up that door, I'm going to do it.
Oftentimes it is. And I would even say it's not just the outreach on email. Send them a connection on LinkedIn.
Yes.
Reach out to different vehicles. We talk about with technologies today, people are everywhere. Right? And you need to be everywhere too, as well. And if you're communicating that message, chances are the probability increases that you'll catch them using multiple platforms for outreach.
Yeah.
And in fact, when they do hire you, they're going to mention, I promise you, one of the reasons you got hired, in addition to your skills to do the job, is because you were that person or individual who stayed persistent and stayed to reach out to me when I'm working a very busy schedule and you caught my attention.
Right. And you still need to have a value proposition.
Of course.
Even when you're going through your network, you want to be known as that guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about this a lot.
Yeah.
I'm known as somebody who knows a lot of people.
Yes.
I'm known to be able to connect you with almost anybody through some way,
yeah.
shape, or form. A young person, I feel like, could be more AI ready and present themselves as, hey, I am the AI ready candidate. And I think, number one, it creating AI literacy for yourself is something that's going to resonate with anyone you speak to, but it's going to be your unique value proposition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that can be unique to everyone. It can be a different form of AI. It could be mm-hmm. what you use it for. It could be that you're creating your spreadsheet using AI, and that's how you reach out to so many people. And maybe that would help you become part of a larger network, more attached, and
sure.
people start saying to themselves, wow, I hear from this person all the time. I wonder how they stay on top of everything,
yeah.
which leads to the conversation, well, I use this device, this machine
yeah.
learning, you know, something like that.
No, Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, we've touched on this and we'll pivot. What all of this is going to lead to, mm-hmm. and we'll get there, what? Securing the interview, and we'll get
right.
to that, right?
Okay.
But everything we've talked about so far is the structured approach, right, to
mm-hmm.
get the interview, and it's
right.
hard. Now, I, given this little career gig I'm in, I'm probably too often, my wife yells at me, on TikTok these days, right?
Right.
But all of a sudden, I don't know if you've seen this, I don't know if you don't use TikTok.
No,
I
don't.
Right? What am I seeing now? Maybe it's because I stayed on it for a second or two. Multiple students, recent grads, right mm. now, class of 25.
Yeah.
I sent out 100 random resumes through LinkedIn, whatever platform, Zippo. Mm. So these students are now articulating. It's not always about the success that you hear, right? Because they always want to talk about their success.
Right.
Students are now, multiple of them, going on platforms and saying, it's tough out there.
Yes.
Right? Are you seeing that with your constituents at Lafayette?
No doubt about it. I think where you see that the most is where they apply to 150 things and wait to hear back.
Yeah. Right.
Wait is a word that's a killer in this space. You need to do the follow-up. Right, we talked about that spreadsheet. You know, when you're reaching out and applying to 150 opportunities, you need to figure out where the people are that you know that's in there from your alumni network or other networks so that you can reach in, use LinkedIn to find out who the talent acquisition professionals are. There is no shot you shouldn't take, right? Because at the end of the day, if you're waiting to get back to your earlier point, there's the volume of it is such that they won't get back to you. Maybe you'll get lucky every once in a blue moon, but you really won't. And so I think that's the mistake often students make. They see volume as the answer, but volume's the start.
Right.
Then you've got to do all of the follow-up and the leveraging inside your own alumni network and other networks to get connected to those people who can make decisions.
And you must showcase in your resume adaptability. You must showcase that you are ahead of the curve when it comes to technology, artificial intelligence. Yeah. Your skill sets have to be cutting edge.
Yep.
Because if you talk to employers will tell me, yeah, we laid off 3,000 people. Well, why did you do that? You seem to be doing well. Well, we're making room for entry-level people who can implement artificial intelligence in their day-to-day. So we're not replacing people, we're replacing people that don't use AI.
Right.
And if you're not showcasing that in your resumes, you're going to be overlooked.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The other thing I would say relative to resumes is you need to have more than one resume, right? You need to custom tailor your resume to the job that you're applying to. Mm-hmm. Now, you always need to be honest and truthful in your resume, but the bullet should reflect the language that is in that job description, because our question around AI, that's the AI that is reading that resume and either letting it through or not letting it through.
Right.
So you need to be really, really on that to be successful.
And job descriptions are written because they know what they want. And they're telling you. It's not a secret. Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you see the same word 4 or 5 times, you better accurately put that word in your resume a couple of times so that when a computer scans it, it says, oh, this might be an applicant that we should talk to.
Absolutely.
No doubt. And bring it up during the interview, which we'll get to in a minute, right?
Right.
They give you what they want.
Right.
Right.
You don't have to word for word it, but company's vision, oh, I read it and I spent the time. We'll get,
and
one
I'll,
last, get
I'll do the and thing to that too. Right. Yes, you're exactly right. The one thing I will say too is oftentimes candidates will look, and if they don't have every single thing in the job description, they won't apply.
Yeah.
Apply.
Right.
Because really, it's the kitchen sink that's in that job description, so go ahead and apply, because they're not necessarily going to get everything they're asking
for. But also
for.
Manage your expectations.
100%.
If they want 4 years of experience and you have a year and a half, manage your expectations. I'll apply, but...
That's right. That's exactly
not going to be too upset if
primary,
I don't hear from them.
100%.
One other topic before we switch for a few minutes to the importance of preparing for the interview, which we want to go a little deeper on. So it's about outreach, right? And we mentioned LinkedIn, which I think is a great tool.
Mm-hmm.
And many students or early career, they don't even use LinkedIn Jobs or other similar platforms effectively.
Right.
Or they get discouraged when they see 200 applicants in day two.
Yep.
So I wonder, I happen to be an advocate of what I would call reactive research, which LinkedIn is almost like when you set it up right, it reaches out to you and you're reacting.
Right.
But how do you feel about proactive research? And I use that term to describe, I kind of have an idea what I want to do. I'm going to go into the companies, the locations, the roles, and I'm going to go into their corporate websites. I don't know what they might have or not. Most of them these days have career opportunity sites. What's your view, Mike, on the both end of reactive and proactive?
The both end is really important.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Because you know, there are platforms like Handshake and 1220 and Simplicity, which a lot of the colleges use to post employer jobs with, but there's more employers now that are also posting them on their websites.
Yeah.
And so don't just go to the platform that is at your school.
Yeah.
also go on to the company's websites and apply there. The worst case is your application's in there twice. That's never a bad thing. They'll combine them and make sure it's there. But I totally agree with you. Don't just wait for things to get populated into your inbox based on the algorithms. That will come, do that. But you need to be proactive about it too, and reach out and do that.
And you can even think through that around, what do I want to do? What's my ideal job? Right? Absolutely. So can we make the pivot to interviewing for a minute?
Absolutely.
But did you have something else before that?
Well, I think we'll drill down on it in a future episode. But there's a hidden job market. You can't just rely on LinkedIn, and we'll uncover those tips and secrets later. But right now, let's go to Mike's interview tips.
So I'll set it up for you, because you and I are in sync. We've already discussed this, right? Yeah. Everything we've talked about, again, getting the interview. Mm. Now, if you've worked so hard, especially in this market, and whether it's, what do they call that thing? HireVue, no disrespect to HireVue. Students hate, right?
Right.
Because asynchronously, whatever.
Absolutely.
And everybody out there has probably gone through one of those. Or you can get a real Zoom interview, right? How do you prepare, and how important is that, and what do you do?
Yeah, it's extremely important, and it's extremely important to prepare in both scenarios, right? You talked about that a lot of initial interviews now are that HireVue or that virtual asynchronous interview that's a set of questions that you're going to be asked to answer. So you've got to prepare for that. It's not like FaceTime on your phone. It is an actual interview. You've got to get comfortable with it. Most schools or most institutions have the same tool where you can practice. You've got to practice. Like the old days, stand in the mirror and practice. You need to do that for the real interviews. You need to practice on the technology so that when you're actually in the interview, you're comfortable, right? Don't make the actual thing the first time you've used this technology, because you'll look uncomfortable. Yeah. And unfortunately, it is technology that's there, but it's a human being that's looking at that completed interview and making a decision whether or not to move forward.
Yeah, right.
So absolutely. And I would say in practicing that for the real thing, mock interviews, right? Most institutions have alumni who will do mock interviews with you to take you through those practice interviews so that you can get comfortable with the things that you're doing, the mannerisms you're exhibiting, so that you can really get some of those things out of the way and be prepared for what are the right things you need to be prepared for in the interview before you actually sit down and have the interview. And your alumni, either in that organization or at least in the industry, can be the best guide as to what kind of questions you should anticipate and how you should prepare and craft your resume for that interview.
Absolutely.
Did you know that if you can't get a human being to work with you, we have tools that will conduct an interview for you and let you know in real time?
Oh, wow.
Hey, make sure
How'd
you're
you
looking
do?
At the camera, slow down, you know, it's
Is that an AI tool?
It's all AI.
Okay.
One of them's called Big Interview. Do you use Big Interview?
We use Interview Stream.
Interview Stream.
I think it's called Interview Prep.
Udel is a free one. Yeah,
okay.
I'll give you a tip. Udel will work with you in real time while you're on the interview. So you'll have a screen, and you'll be looking into it, and Udel will tell you, stop saying, look at the camera, slow down.
Wow. Because they're watching.
Yeah, the AI is picking up all of your movements, everything you're doing. I tend to prefer working with students directly or referring them to alumni.
Yeah.
But if you can't, and it's late at night, and you're stressing out over it,
absolutely.
Drop that into your toolbox.
That's a great tip for those listening out there. Let me build on that in a slightly different way.
Sure.
I happen to be an advocate of interview prep. Mm-hmm. Literally, how many questions can be asked in a 30-minute interview? There are only five or six themes, right? You might not get them all.
Nope.
But if it's why this company, why this role, tell me about yourself. A few behaviorals, which is a way to answer them, you know, a technical maybe, depending on the role, and you better have some questions for me, right?
Absolutely.
I just rattled 30 minutes, right?
That's it.
But it has to be authentic. So my view has been often no script, but little prompts to when they ask me this, if they do.
Yeah.
What am I going to say? Are you an advocate of that?
100%. 100%, because what you just outlined in terms is typically what most interviews will consist of.
Right.
Absolutely. And you need the first most important thing is your elevator pitch, as they call it.
Yes.
Talking about you, and it's got to roll off smoothly. Every single person you're sitting across from that is interviewing you wants to know that you really want to be there. So do your homework on the company, speak with enthusiasm, be able to articulate why you're interested in the job, because they want to know that their time is not wasted, that they're one, that you're one of 500 places you're going to interview, and that this is a practice, right? You want to be wanted, and so you need to have all those ready. And you're judged, I say, equally as much by the questions you ask as those you answer, because those demonstrate what we just spoke about is interest.
Yes. You know, I even say, and I think we just came up with another episode, and I don't think that our previous guests always agree. I used the word stalk them on LinkedIn. I'm an advocate of one question when you have, hey, Jerry, how many questions? Do you have any questions for me, right? One could be personal.
Sure.
One could be strategic. But you better have a couple in mind.
Absolutely.
That come from the research you've done about the firm and the individual. 100%. I don't know how you feel about this. Do you think anybody cares? They're probably flattered when you say, hey, Jerry, I checked you, your background, it's impressive, or Mike, and congrats, you know, if you've posted it, you know, moving on to this next opportunity, you know, what caused you to do that? Because you've saw them and you read their profile on LinkedIn. That's preparation.
100%. That would impress me as an interviewer if you did that as somebody who was sitting across interviewing.
Right.
That's 100%. What we talked about.
Some students don't. Oh, is that creepy? Is it okay?
And I think we have to realize when we're talking about students, there's a lot that they just don't know yet, yes. Right? And what we're talking about here is we're educating them and then articulating why we're suggesting to do this, and then it becomes something that makes sense. Up until then, they wouldn't necessarily think that, right?
Right.
Yeah. What else on the interview? Anything else that you would say?
Yeah.
Top tips.
Top tips. One tip that I would always say is this, and oftentimes people will say, well, why would I do this? Because, of course, I'm interested in the job or I wouldn't be here. Close demonstrating your interest and your desire to move forward.
Yes.
Because people want to know that. And you might think that's obvious, but I promise you, it's like thank you notes.
Yes.
Probably 9 out of 10 interviewees would not do that. If you're one that does, it differentiates you.
They don't close?
They don't close. Or send the thank you note either.
Really?
And when we get asked by students, well, do I send a thank you note via email or handwritten? My answer is yes.
Either one.
Now, because the email will come a lot. They'll get a lot of those.
Yes.
But if you add the handwritten thank you note to it, every thank you note I've ever gotten since I've been at Lafayette College is on a board on my wall. And it's still not full. Differentiators. You're looking for differentiators. At the end of the day, when I was in executive search, it was my job to bring my client 3 what they call QAI candidates, qualified to do the job, available meaning they didn't have to stick around 6 more months to collect a bonus, and they were truly interested, meaning if they got offered the position, they'd take the job. That was my job. When it came down to those 3, the difference between number 1 and number 3 were the little things.
Yeah.
The thank you note, the follow-up, the persistence demonstrated stronger interest. That's the person who gets the job at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%, as you
said. We're coming up on time.
Yeah, we're going to bring in a student, right?
Right, and our student is an international student. So before we switch over to a new episode, do you have tips for international students? They may have to ask for sponsorship or other help in keeping the job, not only getting it. What do you tell them?
Yeah, absolutely. So they will need help, especially from the network that they have within their institution, both the other international students particularly who have gone through and gone through that experience prior to them. So that's a network that can help you out immensely as well as instill confidence in you because you have a shared experience. So really lean into that. Also, make sure you're leaning into the resources available at your institution, programs like InterStride and Going Global, understanding what companies do sponsor H-1Bs, what companies don't. And so you really know where you can target your interest, because if you just go widespread, you're probably going to be disappointed more than you're going to feel success, and that can be really debilitating. So leaning into the network, knowing what tools are available to you to then be able to formulate a plan. And what I call a plan is I call it a 3-tiered plan. If you're an international student, there's a domestic strategy, there's a home country strategy, and there's another country strategy. Yes. And pursue them all 3 to give yourself the greatest probability of landing something solid as an international student. Yeah, those would be things
great,
I would recommend.
Great advice.
We're going to ask you to reiterate that with our international student
sure.
in a minute. But good position right now to pause and conclude this episode and say thank you.
Yeah.
We're going to bring you right back with a student in a minute.
It's always great seeing Mike. He's a wealth of knowledge. Can people connect with you on LinkedIn?
Absolutely. I'd be happy. It's Mike Summers. Right now it says Lafayette College. In 2 months it'll say Davidson College, but it'll be the same mug sitting on the LinkedIn. So please connect with me. I'd be happy to help.
That's awesome, and you will never be sorry. So let's pause here.
Yep.
Thanks for watching this episode, and we'll see you again soon.